isn't what we say or think that defines us, but what we do. Jane Austen. This is the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Hey guys, it's Wednesday, which means it is time for What We Do. It's episode 22, and I'm so excited to welcome Bethany Coates to the show. Bethany is the CEO and founder of Breakline, which is an education and employment company that builds an affordable path to compelling careers. And right now, the organization is focusing on veterans. Bethany and her team are truly making a difference in the lives of veterans. And today, she's sharing about her lessons learned in entrepreneurship, building a business, success stories, and finding your path and finding the career and the place that's really meant for you, and definitely much, much more. So I hope you guys enjoy. Hi, Bethany. How are you?
Hi, Kira. I'm doing well. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so thrilled that you were able to join the What We Do podcast today.
Really looking forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm honored. So I would love for you to just jump right in and maybe give a little bit of intro on your personal background and where you're from and kind of how you grew up.
Yeah. So I'm Bethany Coates. I'm the CEO of a social venture called Breakline Education. And Breakline focuses on education for employment. And I've always been really interested in that space and the whole idea of education as a lever for opportunity. Because I grew up in a small town in Vermont where it wasn't sort of the dominant way of thinking that you would just automatically go to college or automatically go through a degree program. I think maybe 50% of my class went straight to work after graduating from high school. And so I've always been really interested in new forms of education that can really expand access to opportunity. And that's the defining feature of Breakline.
So that's really interesting because you've been to some very prestigious educational institutions, you know, Princeton and Stanford. So was that something that kind of was instilled in you as a young person that was in your goal set? Or how did you kind of come to have those be in your goals?
Yeah, I distinctly remember arriving on campus at Princeton from, you know, this little town in Vermont, and feeling like everybody there already knew each other, and almost like it was a private club that I was getting a glimpse into. And in my community, my three closest girlfriends never finished a semester of college. And at 16, you wouldn't have been able to tell us apart in terms of intellectual aptitude or drive or interests or ambition. It really came down to context. And I was fortunate in that my father had gone to Princeton and had exposed me and my family to that very special university. But I realized that it was an extraordinary privilege to be there, and also that many other people had the potential. They had all the qualities that an institution like Princeton would have been looking for or should have been looking for. And it really came down to kind of context and coaching and awareness that that type of opportunity existed and that it was meant for you. There's a whole psychology, I think, around, does this institution want me? And for folks coming from unconventional or underrepresented backgrounds, I think that there can be a vulnerability there. I know that I certainly felt that way. So I've always just wanted to make sure that the advantages of going to a place like Princeton or going to a place like Stanford, there's no reason why they need to only be associated with those institutions. As a society, we should be really focused on making it as easy as possible for high potential people to connect with really high velocity opportunity. And so that's part of our mission at Breakline, is drawing a really short, direct line between the individual and the access to opportunity.
Yeah. So can you kind of give...
Just one sec. I'm 35 weeks pregnant and I've got a massive chocolate milkshake right from
me. So, absolutely. I love this so much.
It's so hilarious. I'm in my home stretch and I'm taking advantage of every minute.
Well, I'll come back to Breakline. Let's talk about you being a mom. This is your first child.
Oh, no, Kira. No. This is my fourth child and also my fourth daughter. And
oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay. I did. The internet did not tell me that. Okay. So congratulations.
I am so excited. It's super, super fun. And so we were just talking about how earlier in my career, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I remember graduating from Stanford with my MBA and sort of grieving the fact that I wasn't going straight into entrepreneurship. I had decided to accept a job with a consulting firm called McKinsey. And I thought at the time, I was like, I'm missing my chance to ever start a company. But for a whole variety of reasons, it wasn't the right time for me to do it. And what I've learned subsequently is that actually spending 15 years really understanding the sector that most interested me, which is education, and what's wrong with it and where the problems are, all of that means I have really special insight both into the challenges but also how to fix them. And then in terms of being an entrepreneur and starting my own company, I would say just never hesitate to think that could be a terrific path for you if you're a woman in general, and then if you're a woman who plans to have kids. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful avenue, and it has been all joy for me. And, you know, I think there's been a ton of press lately about how difficult it can be for female entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, and a lot of that is really true. Yeah, I mean, there are too many cases where really serious women entrepreneurs are facing all kinds of issues that are completely egregious. In my case, I have 7 investors in Breakline. They happen to all be men. They have been nothing short of extraordinary and so helpful to me, so supportive to a person. When I told them that I was pregnant with my fourth kid, that, you know, all they said was, congratulations, that's amazing. So I would just say, if that's the path that you're interested in, you know, pursue it with confidence, because it has been terrific all the way around.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but in my research on you and on Breakline in your website, it seems like you have an all-female team. So is that by design, or did that just kind of happen? And what is that environment like?
It's the best. It's so awesome. It's not by design. I hired the people who were the very best people for their particular roles, and they happen to all be women, and it rocks. I mean, it's just so, it's been so awesome. There are a couple different reasons for that. One, all of the women on my team are just complete superstars. And we've talked a lot about how together we've created this culture that is inspiring. It's impactful. It's fun. We really enjoy spending time with each other, and we enjoy watching each other succeed and supporting each other in those successes. And I think that that's been a really special part of the experience for me, and I think for everybody on the team. And we're really proud of that, and also conscientious about wanting to maintain that special connection that's part of the culture that we're building together. So it's been awesome. And then in terms of, there have been some mechanics about it that also, about building Breakline together, that also happen to work particularly well for the people who are on this team. And so, for example, we're a 2.5-year-old company. I mean, we're a scrappy startup. We're definitely in the early stages of building this venture. And as a result, we're very careful with every dollar that we spend, and we can talk more about this. We're super focused on the objective of our education, which is employment. And so whenever we're thinking about an investment, we're thinking about, does this lead directly to this concrete outcome that we're driving toward as a team? So for example, we don't have an office because we don't think that that's worth it at this point. And we all work from home. And
that's great, though.
So great. And so, you know, part of the reason why I think so many terrific women professionals end up leaving the workforce is, if you have to be in an office from 8:30 to 5:30 every day, and, you know, FaceTime matters, and that's the case for most employment in our country, it's really hard to get it all done if you also want to have kids and a life. And schedule flexibility is just paramount. So we don't, as a team, we talk about how it's not like we get a free pass on the amount of work. It's hard work and there's a lot of it to do. And we're all have our foot pressed on against the accelerator. And at the same time, if my colleague wants to do part of it between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. and then take her kids to school and go to SoulCycle and then come back and, you know, log back in at 10, as long as she's delivering on her stuff, I don't care. That's not my business how she decides to organize her day. And so there are a lot of mechanics that way in terms of building a company that is fulfilling from the standpoint of the content of the work, and then is also fulfilling and supportive in terms of how you actually approach getting the work done. And so it's been really neat to get to pursue this with such a terrific group of women.
Yeah, I also work from home and I kind of wear lots of different hats. So I feel like for me, I get more work done because there's not like somebody coming by my cubicle to talk to me about things that don't matter, or, you know, there's not a monotony in that. And there's like a hunger and a hustle that I think that comes with building something of your own and starting from scratch. And if that means working from home, then that's the best way to get it done.
100%. I so agree with that. You know, at different points in my career, I've worked for large organizations. And a reality of working for a larger organization is that you need to build a network of colleagues internally to drive especially large initiatives forward. And that requires tons and tons of relationship upkeep. You know, just staying in the mix and staying top of mind for folks. And it's like hours every day of just, you know, kind of building those relationships. And in that type of environment, that's really important and it's part of the job. But it's very freeing. It's very liberating to be building a company where politics are not an issue. You know, that it really is about how do we drive toward this outcome in the most efficient way possible, because we really believe in what we're doing. And so you're absolutely right that I just feel like my day is so productive because all of that ancillary stuff that made a difference in a larger environment is just not even part of what we think about or what we have to do.
Okay, so you obviously seem to have a very specific, you know, ethos that you have around your company and what you're looking for. So what do you look for in an employee? What kind of questions are you asking in an interview to, you know, maybe have them reveal themselves a little bit to you?
Yeah. And I'll say, you know, Breakline is at such an early stage. What we need is very different than what I would potentially have been looking for when I was at Stanford or when I was at McKinsey. Right now, we're growing so fast and it's such a fluid environment that the most important couple of things are, A, someone who is willing to hustle and be super scrappy and exhibit a level of ingenuity that adds a tremendous amount to our environment. Because there, you know, when we're looking at the composition of activities and tasks and responsibilities and outcomes that we're driving toward, it's not like there are 15 people lined up behind us to actually do the work. Each one of us is really critical to that process. So finding folks who are very, very willing to hustle is hugely important. And it's harder than it should be, I think. So definitely test that. And entrepreneurship is great. So for people who want to get their hands in lots of different things, want to know a little bit about sales, want to know a little bit about account management, want to know a little bit about operations, you know, across the board, marketing. It's really fun for that because there's always something going on and not enough people to get it done. And so if you're the type of person who wants to jump in and get your feet wet in a bunch of different areas, a company that's at the stage that Breakline is at could be a really good fit. We're also looking for, certainly for intellectual aptitude. And the reason is that we have a hypothesis around education for employment. And we have a direction, and we think we're on to something really interesting when it comes to upskilling people and preparing them for new careers. It doesn't mean that it's the very best solution that it could be, and it doesn't mean that, certainly doesn't mean that we're done experimenting with it. And so I love to have people on the team who are smarter than I am, you know, more thoughtful than I am, and can bring a different perspective and a different lens and have different suggestions that they want to toss out on the table. I really, really love it when our team gets into a robust kind of back and forth about how we solve a particular issue. This just happened on our team call yesterday. And we ultimately came to a different conclusion than the one that I thought we were going to come to. And it was the right one. And so it's really so helpful to have somebody at the table who's smart and thoughtful and ready to engage, and also ready to take the risk of saying, I think that there's a better way. You know, like, in some ways, it's easier to just go along with a suggestion that someone else makes. You know, there's almost like social norms around like not pushing too hard or not hurting somebody's feelings or, you know, whatever it is. And from a business perspective, though, it's way, way better to really be able to have that robust back and forth. And so looking for that intellectual aptitude and willingness to engage. And then the final thing that we test right up front is it's for attitude. I really want to be around kind people. I care about that a lot. I think it's a hugely important aspect of teamwork and collaboration. I think it's incredibly important when it comes to the dynamic between our team and the companies that we partner with really closely, and of course, the veterans that we work with really closely. And I think having high EQ can be so undervalued in an interview process, and it's actually critically important. And so we test for that a lot. There is no way that I would make a concession about that. It's right up at the top of what's most important. So those are the three areas that I think about right at the outset when we're evaluating a candidate for Breakline.
So last summer, I did Stanford Ignite. And one of the things that I noticed on my team was this, we had four women and two men on the team. And it was almost like the women had a modesty thing, or like we didn't want to necessarily at first on the outset speak up or really speak aggressively about why we're qualified to talk about a certain issue. And I think that veterans might sometimes also struggle with that modesty thing of not wanting to kind of tout why you're qualified for a certain thing. Can you talk a little bit about that concept?
So in general, I have seen patterns of behavior like that within like my circle of women professionals, and then also working closely with veterans. There's a more pronounced tendency toward modesty and discretion and being super humble about accomplishments and about why you deserve a seat at the table. And my perspective on this is that context is super important. So with a veteran approaching an interview process, we always say, you know, for the rest of your career, the fact that you are modest, that you're not going out there with, you know, the bullhorn, like telling everyone how amazing you are, that you're actually understated about your achievements, is going to be something that people love about you and value about you and cherish about you. In an interview situation, you need to challenge yourself to set that aside temporarily, because interviews are time constrained, artificial interactions where the whole purpose of the discussion is to highlight what you can actually bring to the table and to do it as quickly as possible. And that's really hard. So for somebody whose sensibility and training and kind of cultural touchstone is to be understated, to have to on a dime turn it on and really be able to talk about why they're strong in a number of particular areas is challenging. And I think, and I have seen, and of course, you know, we can't talk about every woman everywhere. That's like talking about, you know, the Earth's population. But I have definitely seen it be kind of a common trait amongst my friends, and that might just be who I'm attracted to and who I spend time with, of the same type of thing. And I think it's super important to be aware of the context and when you need to be upfront, to push yourself to be upfront, and not in an overbearing, annoying way, but in a straightforward, fact-based, firm way. Here's why I'm showing up. And to not be apologetic about that. So yeah, I think it is a commonality in some cases. It's something I really value and appreciate most of the time, but there are certainly moments in your career where it's okay to be clear about why you are where you are.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to kind of, I'm going to jump around a little bit. I want to go back to, so you're working for McKinsey, and then you go to Stanford to be associate dean?
Yes. So I was, gosh, I forget the exact title, but I was a consultant at McKinsey. And here's what happened, Kira. I was graduating with my MBA from Stanford, and I had imposter syndrome. I really felt like I was still having that experience of like, I'm a small town public school like kid from Vermont. I need one more stamp of approval. I need one more thing on my resume to convince people that I'm smart and that I'm a hard worker and that I'm a good problem solver. And of course, that's ridiculous. You know, by that point, like I had graduated from Princeton, I had graduated from Stanford. Like I had enough there for people to have a hypothesis that I was capable, but I definitely had that imposter syndrome. And so I went into consulting and I was absolutely miserable. There were things that I liked about it. I liked that everyone was smart. I liked that people cared, that there were really high standards for performance, and that was fun.
Can you just say, like, for the layperson, like, what is consulting? What did you do for somebody that might not know?
Yeah. So at that time, and it's, you know, it's been quite a number of years, so things could have changed. But at that time, what management consulting meant at McKinsey was working on challenging business problems for some of the largest companies in the world. So for example, I worked on a merger between two very large healthcare companies that had global operations across Europe and across the United States. And there was a whole host of strategic questions and issues that we helped them sort of unpack as part of that acquisition process. And the reality was, I didn't care when it really came down to it. What I really cared about was socioeconomic mobility. If I had taken the time to get to know myself before I made that choice out of fear, you know, like I need one more thing to show people that I can do this, I would have made a different choice. And so I remember having this conversation with one of my mentors at McKinsey. And at the time I was flying back and forth to London from San Francisco every week. So taking the red eye out on Sunday, I think, and then flying back on Friday. And I would shower in the business class lounge at Heathrow Airport and go straight to the office and whatever. And then I'd get to this very fancy hotel at the end of the day and just cry because life, my husband, my friend, everything I wanted to do and all the people I wanted to be around were in San Francisco. And I remember having this conversation with one of my mentors at McKinsey, and he said, "Isn't it great? McKinsey's sending you all over the world to do all these cool things." And I just remember thinking, like, no, this is not the work that I want to invest my life doing. And so after about 2 years, I sat down with my husband and I said, I don't care about status. I don't care about brand. I, at that point I had the luxury of not caring even quite as much about compensation. I really cared about feeling connected to my work and feeling inspired by my work. And so that's when I made the choice to go back to Stanford. in a capacity where I was basically designing curricula with a variety of professors at the business school. And I wasn't sure at that point where it was going to lead. I just knew that I would love it. I just knew that I would enjoy it. I didn't have a master plan. It wasn't a chess match that I was playing where I was mapping out the next 10 moves. It really was about, I've had an experience of not having any emotional connection or sense of satisfaction in the work that I'm doing. And I really want to do something fundamentally different that speaks to me on that level. And so that's why I made that change.
So while you're at Stanford, obviously the GSB is a very supportive institution with a ton of resources. So how does one make the decision to make the leap from the support of the GSB to starting your own entrepreneurship venture? You know, how is that kind of jumping off that cliff?
It was very scary, but I also felt ready. And so I ended up spending almost 10 years at Stanford. The first 3 years was all around curricular design and development and execution. The next 3 years, I was in a chief of staff role. And so really gained a lot of insight into the business model of a top performing educational institution and of the sector overall. And so from a strategic perspective, that was a really interesting period of time during my career at Stanford. And then the last 3 years, I was in a global role with P&L responsibility, managing a highly distributed team of people who were working in various capacities all over the world. And so that was much more of a general management experience. And my job at that time was really to lead social impact education for the GSB. So we were trying to think of new forms of education and new delivery formats and also new price points for education. And so that gave me a lot of insight into, you know, if we were going to completely start over, what would this look like? And so by the time I worked through those three positions, I had picked up the entire skill set I needed to start Breakline. And then just as importantly as the skill set, I really had faith in my ability at that point to do it. I also had the insight. I knew exactly what was broken with the educational sector in the US, and I had a hypothesis about how to fix it. And then crucially, I had built a network of people who could help me in very, very practical ways. So most of my investors I met during my tenure at Stanford. And then a lot of our early corporate clients were introduced to me through Stanford connections. So from an expertise perspective, an insight perspective, and a network perspective, I felt very ready. And I had outgrown Stanford. I had outgrown what I could do there. And I wasn't done growing as a professional. I felt like I had way, way, way more to give and much more that I wanted to accomplish. And so it was definitely scary to leave, but it was also absolutely the right decision.
So let's talk about your elevator pitch on Breakline. Like, what do you tell people if they've never heard of it or met you? What is Breakline?
Yeah, so Breakline is a social venture that focuses on education for employment. So we have a couple of different types of programs, but the goal is always the same, which is career transition. And right now we focus on veterans and transitioning military service members who are interested in careers in tech. And so at this point, folks who come through Breakline, we have about a 90% placement rate. So if you're admitted to Breakline and you take our programs, you have a very, very good shot of starting a career with a top company in tech. And we're really proud of that focus and the success in terms of the outcome and the alignment between our work and the impact that we're having on our community.
So why veterans? Why have you chosen to start with this group?
Yeah, there are a couple different reasons. I co-founded a program at Stanford called Stanford Ignite, a post 9/11 veterans, and helped to run that along with my team for a number of years before I left. And the sort of insight for doing that came from a Navy SEAL named John Rodella, who contacted me. We had a mutual friend, a mutual connection, and he contacted me and was just talking to me about how challenging the transition process is. And this guy is so extraordinary. He had an engineering background from the Naval Academy. He had gone into and helped lead one of the most prestigious units within the Navy SEALs. He'd had an incredible career, which I had to like pry out of him with a crowbar because he is so modest. And I thought, why in the world is he finding it so difficult to connect with the next phase of his career? I mean, people should be lining up outside his door to hire him. And so, you know, through that a series of conversations with him, I decided to help start this program. And so gained a lot of interesting insight into the challenges of that transition process. And this is a huge problem for our country. I mean, there are 250,000 service members transitioning out every year. And if somebody like John Rodella was finding that difficult, I mean, just imagine what like a normal person, how a normal person would feel about that process. And so from the perspective of, can education make a difference in terms of enabling deserving people to access opportunity? It just seemed like the very best community, or on a short list of communities where I could really test that hypothesis. And so Stanford Ignite was very focused on, as you know, because you took it, it's focused on people who are interested in starting their own companies. But with Breakline, we focus on folks who want to join existing companies and helping them bridge that pathway in.
So it's shocking to me that the military or the United States government doesn't have like an existing curriculum for transitioning veterans. So what is missing there? What is the problem within the existing curriculum that they do? Because I know that they have to go through some sort of training at the end of their contract. You know, what is it that they're not doing well that you're kind of filling in the gap for?
Yeah, you know, it's a huge challenge. And it's a huge challenge both in terms of scale. So we're talking about 250,000 people every year. If you think about like even the largest educational institutions in the country, they're not capable of training up that many people every year, year in and year out. It's also a challenge of breadth. So within those 250,000, you'll have some, you know, extraordinarily senior generals, for example, who are leaving after multi-decade careers, looking for a much more sophisticated type of career transition than like a much more junior enlisted service member who maybe entered, joined up right after high school and is rotating out after like a 5-year career. So there is a transition program that the services run, but the difficulty with it is that they're trying a one-size-fits-all model when the spectrum of folks going through is so vastly huge that it's impossible to meet everyone's needs. And so it's rare that they meet anyone's needs as a result. And so I think one of the aspects of Breakline that has risen to the top in terms of how effective it is the fact that we're really, really focused. We're a social venture. We would love to be able to add value to everybody's lives. We also know we're not well suited to do that. You know, my background when it comes to education, I am well suited toward working with folks who are the peers of my former Stanford students. So not in terms of academic pedigree, which mattered a lot when I was at Stanford. I don't care about that. I'm talking about a sustained track record of excellence as a professional. That's what I care about most of all. And whether you start at a community college or you start at Princeton or Stanford matters a lot less to me. So we're very good when it comes to that slice of the population, and that's who we're particularly well suited to address and to help and to work with. We wouldn't be the right resource for somebody who, for example, was an electrician in the Navy and wants to be an electrician in the private sector. That's not who we're designed to suit. And we don't pretend and we don't try because we don't want to waste anybody's time. But I think those two challenges are what makes it so difficult for the military to effectively prepare folks for the next stage of their career.
I'm assuming that you must also run into issues with maybe educating companies on why they should be hiring veterans, which to me is a no-brainer. But do you find yourself educating students coming through your program as much as you are companies that could be potential hiring prospects?
Yeah, you know, there definitely, for sure, there is a learning curve in both cases. And there's a continuous learning curve for us at Breakline too. When we work with our veterans, we always say, look, you are maybe 1% of the American population, and you should approach your interview process understanding that very few people you meet most likely will have robust familiarity with your background and why it's relevant for their context. And so you can change that over time once you get inside of a company and you can, you know, be part of that education process. But as a matter of practicality, you have to be ready to tell your story in their language. That's just the reality. And so let's not pretend that that's not the case. Let's actually just see the game and play by the rules as they're currently laid out, and then you can change them later. And then with our companies, we have been really humbled actually by how willing they are to partner with us. I mean, we're a tiny social venture, and we have companies like Facebook and PayPal and BMC and a number of others coming to the table proactively and saying, we really want to hire veterans. What's difficult is these are highly, highly competitive businesses. They are racing constantly, and they have hundreds of candidates lined up for every role, and they understand the backgrounds of those candidates, and they intuitively understand whether and how they're a fit for a particular role. And so they're kind of like efficiently set up to hire a particular type of person with a particular type of background. So they have to make an extra investment to understand a candidate coming from a military background. And so our perspective on that is the conversation is around, this is why this person is great for business. This is not a charity hire. This is not like a nice to have. This is someone who is going to drive your business forward in concrete ways and will perform above and beyond the conventional candidate standing next to him or her in line for this role. And so far, that's been exactly what has happened. And as we've built our track record and we have so many success stories to point to, then that conversation becomes a lot easier because our very earliest candidates are really paving the way for the folks who come after them. So it's been really inspiring to see that.
Do you want to share any of those success stories? Anything that really jumps out at you that you're just like, wow, I was part of this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the very first person hired out of Breakline, her name is Heather Holcomb. She took our very first program, which was in January of 2016. She grew up in like small town Texas. She was a first generation college graduate. She absolutely crackles with brilliance. She's incredibly smart, could have gone anywhere. She ended up going to the University of North Texas because it was about 20 minutes away from her house and she could live at home with her parents and save on room and board because she was putting herself through school. Heather worked three jobs to graduate from college debt-free. She worked at a dry cleaner. She was a waitress. She sold inflatable seats at the Texas Motor Speedway. I mean, she was so driven to complete and to earn her degree and not be struggling under a massive amount of debt like millions of Americans are. So she graduated debt-free and directly joined the Marine Corps. Heather, I think, is like 5'1" and like 90 pounds. I mean, she's so tiny. Despite her diminutive size, she has the spirit of a lion. And so like, I can totally see her. I never got to see her active duty, but I could just envision her whipping those folks into shape. And so she was a communications officer in the Marine Corps. So she built server farms in the middle of the desert in, you know, Kuwait or something, and then would pick them up and move them every 3 months. So she was in a technical role, and she was coming out. And like me, when I was leaving the safety of the Stanford MBA program and having imposter syndrome and feeling vulnerable about what to do next without a real safety net beneath me, Heather was having that same feeling as she was leaving the Marine Corps, where she had excelled and done incredibly well and knew the rules of the game. A mutual connection encouraged her to apply for Breakline. She took it. Within a couple of weeks, it was like 3 weeks of graduating, she had a couple of offers and chose to accept a role as a senior product manager at PayPal. And she has been there for 2.5 years, just absolutely thriving, and is, you know, universally considered a top performer there. She has loved her experience, and I think the feeling is very mutual. And she has said to me many times that never in a million years, you know, as somebody coming out of the Marine Corps with her background, would she even have been aware that that type of opportunity could be a fit for her and could be a possibility for her. It's that psychology that we were talking about earlier. And it would have also been very, very hard for PayPal to have found her. So that's where, you know, Breakline, being able to create that value for Heather and for PayPal, is so exciting for us. And we're really humbled to be a partner for the communities that we serve. And we're really grateful to be able to play that role.
So, I mean, that must mean so much to you. Like, how does that make you feel that your company, you know, your baby, your scrappy startup is able to provide that sort of an opportunity to a Marine of all, you know, of somebody very special?
I feel so many things about it. I feel so grateful. I really feel so grateful after having spent a big part of my career not having an emotional connection to my work. I'm so grateful to feel this tremendous sense of alignment between my personal values and my professional interests and the career that I've been able to build. I feel really inspired to be building it with the team that is at the table at Breakline today. I mean, I really believe that these women, I think we push each other to be at our very best. And it's a privilege to work with people who are so talented. And I'm so profoundly grateful to be able to work with veterans and service members who make my life possible, protect this country. It's not free. It comes at a cost. And to be able to give back in some small way for the sacrifices that they've made and the choices that they've made on my behalf with the goal of protecting our country that's such a privilege to be able to do that. And then I just love working with all of the companies that have come to the table to support Breakline. So mostly I feel a tremendous sense of gratitude and also a tremendous sense of fulfillment. When I look at what we're doing today, it feels like I'm exactly where I should be. And that's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, it's very lucky too, I think. Not everybody can say that, you know, their work is inspiring and they feel like they are where they should be, that this is meant for them.
Yeah, and I've definitely had moments in my career, like when I found myself in, you know, the hotel room in London, what am I doing here? Why am I in this place? So almost on a daily basis, I view my current work through that lens of, gosh, I'm so, so happy that I had the good fortune to have traveled this path and to be where I am today. So I do. I feel very, very lucky.
You also mentioned imposter syndrome a few times. Could you maybe explain exactly what that is to someone who might not know? And do you still experience that, or how have you worked through that?
The way that I think about imposter syndrome is The feeling that you do not belong where you are, that you haven't earned the opportunity to be where you are, and that at any moment that might become apparent to somebody else and they might call you out on it. And so that's how I think about imposter syndrome. I think that it's super common in my experience. It's been super common with my women friends at various points in their professional careers, especially at inflection points, maybe when they were looking at a big promotion or some kind of big opportunity, feeling like, gosh, you know, for some reason they've made a mistake and invited me here and they're going to find out at some point that I really don't belong. And, but I also see it with our veterans too, you know, like, gosh, Breakline really, we tell them all the time, we actually make a point of saying we don't make admissions mistakes because imposter syndrome is so common in that community too, as they're approaching transition. And it used to really drive important decisions that I made around my career, you know, like I chose to go into management consulting, a field in which I had zero interest because of this imposter syndrome kind of cloud hanging over me and the feeling that I needed just one more stamp. And now I think it's one of the joys of getting older. I'm in my 40s too, and I just have let go of that. I have zero interest in spending any time or energy thinking about that. And you know, and I'm comfortable with what I know how to do. And I'm also comfortable with being honest about what I don't know how to do and either partnering with or hiring or borrowing expertise from somewhere else. And so I, you know, I've kind of shed that for the most part. And I really work hard also to help the Breakline team shed it too, because it's a heavy burden to carry around and it's completely useless. And so I don't want any of them having it either. They're so phenomenal at what they do. And I don't want our vets carrying it around. So I'm like a, you know, a champion of just shedding that skin. It's so unhelpful. And so get rid of it.
Yeah. Okay. So along that line of things that you've learned through all this process, if there's a female entrepreneur out there that's about to jump into her own venture or a young woman starting out in like a first career type of thing, what is your major advice? I guess, especially for the entrepreneurship thing, you know, like what are the things that you learned that you just say, you know, you have to keep this in mind?
So there were three core strengths that I had that helped me start Breakline and get it off the ground and enable it to take flight. And those were, I had very deep expertise in the industry. So I knew education. I knew what world-class education looked like. I knew what the business model should be because I could see what was broken about the current system. And I knew exactly the profile of person who I thought I could be most helpful with. So that, like, having core expertise for me was really, really important. The second thing that was important was the insight itself. And that was really driven by my expertise. Like, I had the skill set, but I also had the insight about what was wrong with the sector and how to fix it. And in my very first iterations of Breakline, I was wrong about a lot of what the solution looked like. But it was having a mindset of experimentation and iteration that enabled us to pretty quickly as a team zero in on the stuff that we were doing that was really effective and to double down on that and to make that a core part of what we did going forward. So it was the skill set and then the insight. And then the final thing, which is so incredibly important as an entrepreneur, is the network. So if I had tried to start Breakline 15 years ago, I would have failed. And I would have failed because I didn't have that incredibly robust network of folks who were coming to the table to help me in very practical ways. So I wouldn't have known who to reach out to for funding. I wouldn't have known who to reach out to come on board as a pilot customer. There were so many different ways in which I needed to ask for help at the very beginning. And so through the course of my career, I had been lucky enough to work with some really, really outstanding people and to develop close relationships with them, close professional relationships. And so when I needed help starting this venture that I really believed in, people stepped up in such crucial ways. And so those were the three areas that were most critical for me as I was first getting the company off the ground. And I would encourage any entrepreneur to think carefully and deeply about all three of them.
I think that Silicon Valley and any sort of business education talks a lot about the pivot, concept of the pivot. So what leads to a successful pivot, and which I'm sure you've had to do a few times?
For us, it was really letting the data guide the decision. And that sounds really obvious, but when you are starting a company and you're working so hard, and Kira, you called it my baby, it does feel like that. Like, it feels like your baby.
Your fifth baby.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and as an early stage, whether you're the founder or whether you're an early stage employee, I mean, there's a level of ownership and investment that just kind of far surpasses what I think is typical in the working world. And so when you're really committed to an idea, the data can be staring you in the face. And it can be very hard to say, you know what, it's telling us to go this way when we want to go, you know, it's telling us to go right when we really want to go left. And so Breakline is the nature of what we do. It's emotional, right? Like, we really care about our veterans and we really care about the companies that we work with. We're not an organization that will ever work with millions and millions of people. We are going to know every single person that we touch. And so it matters to us on like a visceral level. But one of the smartest things that we do as a team is really let the data guide our decisions, even when those decisions are painful for us, and sometimes they are. But it enables us to be clear-eyed in pursuit of having the most profound impact that we can possibly have.
So I'm also assuming that you've probably pivoted like in dream setting and goal setting through your entire career. And if you're comfortable in saying, I'm really interested to know what you wrote about in your Stanford Business School application and if that has kind of stayed the same or changed, and like what has been that process for you of your arc of your career?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a really interesting question. I actually remember what I wrote about, and what I wrote about reflects the imposter syndrome that I was feeling at the time, because what I wrote was that I really hoped, this is so hilarious to me right now, I really hoped that I could be a partner at a top management consulting firm running their like social impact practice. Meanwhile, that's not what management consulting firms care about, and which I, you know, was painfully aware of when I was there. So I was kind of spinning a story that I thought my audience would want to hear versus being deeply introspective about what I actually cared about. I mean, it really took my deep, deep dissatisfaction with that career path, which is a fabulous career path for some people. Like, for some people, that's the perfect fit. But for me, it just, there was nothing there for me that I wanted to pursue. And I had to experience that before I was willing to look at myself in the mirror and say, that's not for me. And that's okay. But, you know, coming to a point where I could be honest with myself about what I loved and what I cared about and what I wanted to do and going after that was one of the best moments in my life. And I'm just grateful that I had the resources and the confidence finally at that moment to take that step.
So before I let you go, I know we're coming up short on time. How can people get in touch with Breakline or get in touch with you or learn about Breakline if they're interested, or what would you like to share with them about how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you so much, Kara. So they can go to our website, which is breakline.org. They can email us. Our email address is on our website, and they can also follow us on social media. If they search on LinkedIn or Facebook for Breakline, they'll find us. So all those ways are terrific ways to learn more about what we do and to get in touch.
Well, I like that you said what we do, because that's the name of the podcast. So thank you for the branding. And last question, I like to ask, you know, we've talked about defining moments a little bit already, but if there's anything that stands out to you as, you know, like, this is my moment of who I am, good or bad, that has kind of led you on your current path, is there anything that stands out to you, like a what we do moment for your future?
Yeah. You know, when I was thinking about leaving Stanford and starting Breakline, I thought, you know what, if I change one person's life by making this choice, that will be worth it to me. And I will always think, even if the company fails, I will always think that it was a great decision to go after it. And when Heather Holcomb got hired right away, I thought, you know what, I made the right call, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's been an incredibly fulfilling journey since then to be able to build on her success and to see that happen over and over. And so I just, again, feel very, very privileged to have the opportunity to build and to have an impact and to hopefully, you know, add some value to my community and to the people who have given so much to our country. So I'm delighted to be where we are today as a team.
Well, I think the work that you do is absolutely incredible, and I'm excited to follow the growth of Breakline. I'm sure you're going to continue to do really amazing things.
Thank you so much, Kira, for the opportunity to tell our story. Really appreciate it, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much, Bethany, and congratulations on your new baby.
Thank you. By the way, I finished my chocolate milkshake.
Yes, good, good. I'm glad that I gave you enough reprieves when I decided to talk about myself. It was really for you.
Very thoughtful.
You know, I'm all about making my guests feel as comfortable as possible.
That is awesome.
Thanks for listening. Tune in every Wednesday for the latest episode of the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Follow at Kira Kazantsev and at What We Do Podcast on Instagram for the latest podcast updates, or go to whatwedo.live or whatwedopodcast.com for our blog, bonus content, and info. Questions? Email us at info@whatwedo.live. See you next week. What We Do by Kira Kazantsev is mixed and mastered by Resonate Recordings. Interested in starting your own podcast? As a What We Do listener, you can go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free. Just let them know we sent you. If you have a podcast or are considering starting one, I can't recommend them enough. They are amazing audio engineers that understand podcasting like no one else. Go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free today.